Good.
Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order for September 17th Planning and Zoning Meeting at 7:01. Could we stand for the Pledge Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Karen, you call the roll, please?
Mr. DiGiovanni?
Here.
Mr. Sanchez?
Here.
Mr. Miskowitz?
Here.
Mr. Sadlick?
Here.
Mr. Harris?
Here.
Mr. Kupchansky?
Here.
Mr. Blizzard?
Here.
Full house.
Okay. I'd like to get a motion to make Dan Blizman a full member of the board for tonight's meeting for voting purposes. Can I have a motion, please? Second.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Number four, additions, deletions, corrections to the agenda. Do we have any? If not, can I have a motion to accept the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Danny, second?
Second.
Albert, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Number five, communications. I have none. Ryan, do you have any?
No.
Okay. Anyone else? Number six, public portion. Is there anyone from the public wish to speak? Anyone from the public wish to speak? Mark, is there anybody online?
Yes, this is Kim Shepherd.
Go ahead, Kim.
Hi.
Just state your name and your address for the record, please.
Kim Shepherd, 14 Benanto Drive.
Go ahead.
And I'm just calling in regards to the changes for the 43 Franklin Avenue with the maps and changing that's going on, and how it will be affecting me, if anything. And is it possible that when we're discussing this during the maps are being shown or whatever the changes are, if I would be able to speak up at that time?
Yeah, once we get to that on the agenda, Karen, if you have any questions, I'll allow you to ask your questions at that time, as long as it pertains to the subject.
It's Kim, not Karen. Sorry.
Oh, it's Kim. I'm sorry, Kim. Is there anybody else from? Go ahead. Oh, okay. I didn't hear. Is there anybody else from the public that wish to speak? Final time, anybody from the public wish to speak? Okay, public portion is now closed. Number seven, approval of minutes. Everyone should have received the minutes for 7:16 and 7:18. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes for 7:16, 7:18?
So moved.
Danny, can I get a second?
Second.
Albert, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. For August 20th, I need a motion to table. Can I get a motion to table that?
So moved.
Danny, second?
Second.
Raul, all in favor? Anyone opposed to that? Okay, motion carries. Number eight, receipt of applications. 8A, 1 Elizabeth Street, City of Derby Planning and Zoning Commission, zoning text change application. Amendments to section 195-28.C and 195-28.D regarding the location and number of cannabis establishments. In our packets, everyone should have the documents.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, the packet includes the application, which was signed by you and sent off to the Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments and the South Central Connecticut Regional Council of Governments for their opinion or their report on the text amendment. And this will require a public hearing. We did just get this afternoon the report back from the Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments. So that is in hand. We do not yet have the SCROG report, but this does require a public hearing. So, and there's no timeline associated with approval or denial for a commission-sponsored text amendment. Yeah, a motion to receive and schedule for public hearing for next month or whenever you feel comfortable.
I'll make a motion to schedule that public hearing for our next regular meeting in October. Let's not belabor this.
Okay, David. So our next meeting is going to be on October the 15th. Do I have a second?
Second it.
Raymond, all in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay. Nine, public hearing. 9A, 94 Water Street LLC and K and X Services LLC special exemption application to construct 4 2-bedroom townhouse residential units on map 8-5 lot 14. I believe in our packets we have a letter from attorney Thomas asking that the public hearing be postponed to 8:15. Did everybody get the letter?
What's the date of that letter, Mr. Chairman?
It was dated for today, September 17th. Oh, Dave, you might it'll be in your email that was sent, I think, around 5:20 or 5:30.
Yeah, I got one at 5 o'clock, so I haven't had a chance to really look at that. What, and why did that come in so late?
Ryan, do you have a comment on that?
No, I don't. Other than I reached out to the attorney to see what his pleasure was for this meeting. And it was his position that he wanted to table the discussion tonight and continue to the next meeting. It was a much more discussion than that.
Mr. Chairman, the proper protocol is for any requests like that to go through the zoning office, specifically the zoning enforcement officer. It should not be sent to the city's planner, something like that. That's one of the procedures that we really have to straighten out. Has Kevin White had an opportunity to look at that letter?
No.
Well, David, if I may, I think it's simply he could have shown up this evening and simply requested or granted a continuation or an extension of the public hearing. I think that's within their rights.
Well, he, you're right, Brian, but he also probably needed to provide some kind of an explanation for why he needed an extension.
Well, in the letter, David says, my client's engineer has been in contact with Ryan, and for those discussions, the plan has been revised and transmitted to Ryan today.
Oh. But not to Kevin White, who it's supposed to
be. It does not say that, no. Right. Yeah, it was sent to Kevin White as well in the document.
Kevin, again, have you had an opportunity to look at that?
No, David, I did not.
It wasn't sent until late today, David. So what is your suggestion, Dave?
without knowing what the contents are of that new plan, I can't make any judgment at all.
Well, he's just asking for an extension.
Yeah.
Of the public hearing. Because with the extension, the time period for the public hearing, it's going to expire on the 29th of October anyway.
I'd like to hear the opinion of the other members of the
committee. Okay. Does anybody else have any discussion on the issue?
Mr. Chairman, I move to grant him the extension.
Anyone else?
I'll second that.
I'd just like to, the applicant is the one that grants the extension. The commission would be in a position to just table discussion tonight and continue the hearing to the next meeting.
Right.
That'll be the.
Okay, so we'll move the public hearing. We'll just table it for tonight, and it'll be set on the agenda for the 15th.
Yep. Keep the public hearing open until...
Correct. Do we need a motion to keep that open?
Ray made the motion. Dan seconded.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, so all in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. We'll do it. 10:15. Okay, number 10, old business. 10A, 94 Water Street LLC and K&X Services LLC, special exemption application to construct 4 2-bedroom townhouse residential units on map 8-5, lot 14, discussion and possible action. So we could just make a motion to table it, right? Can I get a motion to table to the next meeting?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. 10B. 43 Franklin Avenue, Theodore and Cynthia Eswan, resubdivision application, revision of lot lines and modifications of conditions of resubdivision approval for property shown on Derby's Assessor's map 4-5, lots 102 and 104. Can I get a motion so that we could discuss 10B? Okay. We have a motion drawn up. I also have Attorney Spoonheimer here, too, for the applicant.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Yourself?
Good. Does anyone have any questions?
No.
Yeah.
No. I think maybe we can allow the attorney to just explain why they're here tonight.
Okay.
Your Honor, I think Your Honor.
That's the first.
Compared to some of the jokes I dealt with, I mean, yeah.
Microphone. With Ryan and certainly with counsel and something which was proposed a while ago. What we've really done, I'm sorry, can you hear me? By the way, what we've really done is just taken and divided this property into two lots, as it's always been in two lots until the merger. And they're both lots are within zoning. They there's no movement of the easements at this time. Nothing is changing other than a lot line which sets up two parcels which both comply with every zoning regulation for building lots in the city of Derby on Franklin Avenue in that zone. So we're very pleased to come before the board and ask your approval of just this lot line differential tonight, and we can move on. That's not to say we may never be back here, but at least for now we're not touching the easements whatsoever. They maintain their entirety, and the house is already built, and the S1s are selling it in a very much of a time of need, to be honest with you, for a variety of reasons, and we seek your support this evening.
Just for clarification, so the board at the last month's meeting, I believe it was, approved the re-subdivision application. And your request tonight is simply to adjust one of the lot lines to increase the area of one of the lots so that it complies without the need to modify the easement. So
absolutely. Yes, sir.
So it's simply a modification of the approval.
Oh, the approval was already made. Lot line that was approved. And thankfully, this is a suggestion months ago, which unfortunately we couldn't do it at the time. And thankfully we were able to get back here now. It's the absolute simplest way of handling this situation. And I'm very pleased we're able to appear before the board at this time.
And then but that adjustment in the lot lines would mean that both lots comply with the zoning regulation.
Absolutely. Everything is listed on the map showing that they do comply.
Thank you. I just wanted to be clear that that was your request.
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Sir.
On the previous site plan, when the easements were smaller, I believe you were showing a typical floor plan of a house that would fit in that lot south or north of the main easement. Now that that easement is the original size, are you still confident that that's still a buildable lot?
Yes, it is. Well, the buildable area is 15,508 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
You needed 15,000. So there is area to build it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not a builder will consider that to be a legitimate lot to build on and make an investment, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, they can give and convey the house eligibility. That's why it was put in.
Mm-hmm. And then my only other question was that small swath that's to the south of that gas easement, that seems to be larger than what was shown previously. Is there any way that something can be built in that area? That's south of the easement area.
I don't know. I wouldn't believe so, to be honest with you. I'm not a builder, but
imagine
that building right there.
Because it looks, the easement, it looks different from previous site plans,
Raul,
where the easement was.
If you follow my cursor, I think this might help.
Mm-hmm.
So the easement today falls along this line here. Okay. Everything to the south, now south on this plan is up.
Yep. Right?
So just to make things easy. Everything from the south to the south of that easement line. So all this area over here is encumbered today by gas easements and City of Derby easements. Everything to the north or down is buildable area.
Right.
And this buildable area is actually larger than what was previously approved.
Right. And the only reason I bring up the area south of the easement was I believe someone from the public had concerns about that triangle that you're pointing out there, Ryan, that was possibly a buildable area as well for like a shed or an accessory building or something like that. So I know that was a concern brought up. I'm not taking credit for that one because I know that was a public concern. So I'm just pointing that out, that it looks, I could be wrong in my thinking of what the original site plan looked like, but that area south of the easement just looks larger than what I remember. And if I'm wrong, I apologize.
So one more item here. The easement modifications that were proposed as part of the original approval had the easement line coming up, following my cursor through here and then cutting across the property. So they were actually shrinking the easement as part of the plan. This whole triangle is still encumbered by the easements, plural. So yes. It's...
There's no land south of the easement.
It's lawn.
I must apologize because I was absolutely going to go.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Kathy Beers. Can you please let me know when we're allowed to ask a question about this subject?
Yeah, we'll let you know, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions from the committee? Commission?
So, Ryan, just for clarification, could you run your cursor along the entire easement areas that this lot number two is encumbered by so that sure. everybody has a better idea on what area cannot be disturbed, cannot be built on?
So my cursor starting on the northwest, yeah. Heading south,
yeah.
then heading east.
East, yeah.
Then south again along the property line of Miss okay. Barrios, following the property line. Now the easement actually extends beyond.
Well, yeah, let's.
So the easement actually extends onto the Barrios property, but.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, and then following the property line out to Franklin Ave okay. and to the north back again to the close of the easement. So this.
Is the buildable area.
And if you may recall, this proposed lot line here that they're mm-hmm. seeking to have as part of this modification is some
coming in
seven feet to the north of where it was before.
Now that easement area to the east of the property line for this lot number two, could you put your cursor there? To the east, that's to the...
Oh, over here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're okay, we have a property line between lot number two, and I believe that's Shepherd's property.
Yes.
Okay. And then going up, I'm not sure who that property owner is. But that easement runs into the other property as well. I just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Not there. No. To the east.
Oh, into Shepherd. Yeah, it continues down to Bonato.
Right. Okay. And that area is not part of this lot number two, correct?
No, the lot line is right here as it is today.
Okay, that's good. And then do we have any idea of what the width is at the setback line for the buildable area of lot number two?
It varies.
Well, no, I mean, it's a 30-foot setback in the R3 zone, correct?
No, the side setback.
No, front yard setback.
Oh, front, I'm sorry. Yeah, front yard setback is 30
front
feet.
Front yard correct. Setback. It goes back to Raul's question, okay? So we don't have a 30-foot mark on this line. But I'm assuming it's more in line with where the existing house is now, maybe somewhat less.
The existing house is shown on the map as 50.7. So
okay.
So the house could in theory be close up here, or it could right. be further in the back. But yeah.
And again, for clarification, our zoning regulations require a 15-foot. Side yard setback to a property line,
mm-hmm.
but not to an easement line.
Correct.
Correct? They could Correct. Build right up to the easement line, but they have to stay 15-foot setback from the side property line.
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Are you good, Dave?
Yeah, I'm very good.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Ray.
Did the zoning enforcement officer look at this? I know Ryan did, and Ryan, you're good with it, right?
Yes, I am.
Kevin? Is Kevin on the call still?
Yeah, no, I have not seen this map.
Any other questions from the commission? Okay, I think, was it Kim?
I believe it was Kathy.
Kathy?
Yeah.
Okay. Kathy, do you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, my question is, because now that I see all these line changes once again, and didn't have a whole lot of time to review, but my major concern is if these proposed changes that are being requested for approval here, can they be made if either of these properties have already been sold?
I'm not following your question.
Can you change the property line post-sale?
Okay. Ma'am, Kathy?
Yeah.
Can you state your name and your address for the record for the minutes, please?
It's Kathy Berrios, 19 Franklin Avenue, Derby.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you.
I think to answer your question, Ms. Berrios, is that any property owner has the legal right to pursue lot line revisions, resubdivisions. They'd be purchasing a parcel of land and they would be able to pursue development of that property in accordance with zoning regulations and all applicable codes.
Right. But if the property has already been sold, wouldn't the buyer want to know that there's this proposal now to change the property line?
Well, Mr. Spoonheimer, has the property been sold?
Property is presently.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. The maps which were before you have been sent to the buyer's attorney for their title search company, and they're certainly been given obviously all the dimensions as shown on the map. There is no one, to the best of my knowledge, who is even interested in the. I don't say there's always interest, but there's no one who is contacting my office for any contract on the lot. We're hoping to convey the home in a very, very short period of time due to contingencies which exist for the Eswan family at this time.
So neither of these properties are sold?
Neither property has been sold at this time. Hopefully, I'm not hiding anything, Mary. Hopefully the home will sell shortly. And I do not know what will happen to the other lot.
Okay. Does any other commission members have a question? If not, we have a yes. Yeah, sure. Sarah?
No, I'm sorry. Move out of the way.
Hi, Sarah Wadomsky, 95 Academy Hill Road, President of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen. So I know this board has spent a lot of time on this matter, as has the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen. So I just want to make sure, because we had a motion at one of our last meetings to approve the easement modification as previously existed. So I want to make sure for our purposes going forward that my board understands what we're approving tonight. So were the original existing easements, are those back in action? Is it now requesting no easement modification at all to the original easements?
Madam President, yeah, the answer is yes. The original easements are staying exactly as they were, as if we never even came into this proposal.
Both the city and the gas?
Yes. I don't have any idea what's going to happen in the future, but both of those easements are not being touched at this point in time.
Okay. So we can adjust that at our.
Yes, you may. Yes, certainly can.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay. Ryan, I have a motion that we drafted. Could you read that, please?
Okay, this is dated September 17th, 2024. This largely, just for you, for everyone in the commission, replicates the previous motion. We just provided for the an alternate option for the applicant to essentially file a re-subdivision map similar to what you have seen in front of you today, because the previous motion required that the easements be reduced and filed before the map be filed. So that's sort of the gist of what I've got here, but I'll read this in Mr. Revere's benefit. Dated September 17, 2024, application 43 Franklin Avenue, application for re-subdivision. Motion, final review of the plans, supporting documentation submitted in support of this application. The Derby P&Z Commission hereby approves the resub application on property shown in Derby Assessor's Map 4-5, lots 102 and 104, subject to the following conditions. This approval shall be based on the following documents submitted in support of this application, numbers 1 through 10, with the following stipulated conditions. Prior to endorsement by the acting chairman and conveyance of any lots from the owner, the filing of the subdivision map and all approved reductions and easements shall be filed on the Derby land records in accordance with the general statutes of the state of Connecticut. Alternately, this is new, the applicant may file the subdivision map as shown on reference map number 9, where lots 1 and 2 are sized to provide the minimum lot area without modifications to the existing easements. 2, the re-subdivision map shall be reviewed for compliance by the zoning enforcement officer, city engineer, corp counsel, prior to filing the Derby land records. The subdivision map shall be revised to A, remove any references to proposed buildings, drivers, or topography. B, and this one's tweaked as well, depict the easement modifications as shown in reference map 4 and 6, unless the lot line is adjusted to provide the minimum lot area exclusive of existing easements as shown on reference map number 9. In that particular case, the second half of B was modified. And then C, 3, and 4 are identical to what you had at the previous motion.
Okay, can I get a motion?
Gino, I'll make a motion to approve based on the planner's statement.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Raymond.
I would just like to see the setback lines on there for the neighbors. If you could show the building setback lines on the vacant lot that's being created here.
Sure, that's appropriate. So we can add that on under 2D, that building setback lines be shown on proposed lot 2.
Okay.
This way there's no questions on any of that. Thank you.
So
can I get it? I'll second that.
Dave, do you accept it? Oh, Dave, do you accept that amended motion?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to clarify. Is this the motion that was in this packet that was sent this afternoon?
Yes.
Because I don't see a C3C. That's different than what's in here.
2C. Not 3C.
Yep. There was 2A, B, and C.
Yep.
We added 2D.
2D.
But it also says here approved reduction in easements. So they're not asking for that. So no. What is the story with that?
The way that I drafted this, so if you look at 2B, depict the easement modifications as shown in reference map 4 and 6, unless the lot line is adjusted to provide the minimum lot area exclusive of existing easements as shown on reference map number 9. So what I'm saying there is if they go with the reference map number 9, that there's no easement modifications needed. So I'm just providing that alternate.
So the previous approval then is null and void then? What was approved at the previous meeting is null and void?
What meeting? I think the way
it's not null and void, it's being modified. But do you want to clarify that you're going with the alternative tonight?
We are definitely going with the alternative tonight.
Say that again.
We are definitely going with the alternative tonight. Tonight's plan, the one you see tonight, is what we are definitely going with.
Correct.
And we can modify the motion to reflect that.
It might be clearer for everybody.
I'll put that totally on the record. All we were interested in before your board, the approval of this map for tonight to be able to report it on the land records.
Right.
And get the title company so they go with that. Anything else with the with the easements or anything else, or whatever you want to do as far as the setbacks, or that's fine by us. We just want to make sure that we can get this map on the land records so the title company can look at it.
Well, we already have the motion. We have it seconded, And excellent. It was seconded with 2D added for the setbacks lines on the map.
So just for the record, because I just want to be clear on the motion. So the map that's being approved, Ryan, is the map referenced in number 9 of your motion. And that is with the modified lot line, which increases.
Correct.
No easement. And no easement reduction.
That's right.
Right. And no easement reduction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're good there. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone right. opposed? Okay. 10B. Dude,
may I just ask, can we bring the Mylar to be signed in City Hall now?
Yes, just provided that you add the setback lines. The map should be retitled to say re-subdivision map. You have the signature block for the chairman. It's all in the motion, right. And what Mr. Sablik added as well.
May I have a copy of the motion, if it's all possible,
to send our surveyor? Thank you very much.
Or it's not. 2D isn't written. It's all scattered.
Actually, you know, take this copy.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Let me add that for him.
Had some doodling on that one. Yeah.
Oh,
here you go.
Yeah.
Did you add 2D?
I didn't add it, but he'll
pass it. Mr. Attorney Spoonhammer, let me see that.
Sure.
I could add 2D onto that so that when you give it to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chairman, thank you, members of the board. Really, thank you for something which has been rather time consuming and certainly many ups and downs, and especially at the Ryan and Corporation Council of Clare, they were extremely helpful. And again, I can honestly say thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. 11A, application procedures. Bill, I believe you have some information and.
It didn't magically appear. So.
Is there a way to put the slides on the screen?
Yeah, we could get them up there for you. Mark, could you put the slides up on the.
Ryan, you should have them too, right? So it's meeting slides he's going to present.
Yeah, you sent them to us.
It's going to take a second because I can't log on to my work email. So if you want to get started.
Well, if you go to the website, the city website.
Oh, you got it. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I apologize for not having.
That's okay. Paper.
I thought so too, but I assume no news was good news, but I shouldn't have done that. She must have been busy because. Well, I'll wait and see the slide. So to start, the assignment was to look at documents, their quality and the timing of the documents as they come to this commission. So to do that, I dug into the entire process about how all that works. And what I did for tonight was just parse out what's associated with the documents themselves, right? So what I'm gonna show you is not the entire process that the documents go through, but just the steps the documents get touched at before they end up here, so that people can work on them. And again, the focus is on timing and quality. And the other thing I wanted to do is publicly say, I think Kevin and Lisa do an excellent job. I sat with them for over an hour and talked about this process and how it works, what they do.
they're excellent gatekeepers. I had mentioned before that I thought maybe you could submit an application on a on the back of a cocktail napkin. That is absolutely not true. It would never happen, right? There is they're both Kevin and Lisa are great gatekeepers, and they make sure that the documentation that comes in is administratively correct, right? They can't always answer for everything else that's within the documents, but for that point, they make sure that all the blanks are filled in correctly, and that they that you have everything you need to start work on an application for a site plan. So if we could go to the next slide. So this series of steps, again, is for the perspective of the document itself, right? It doesn't include everything that's involved, but it does talk about when the application gets received, right? It gets received in the office in City Hall. Kevin's usually involved. He's probably talked to the applicant ahead of time and provided some guidance. Lisa makes sure that the documents are filled out correctly and that they collect all the documents, paper and electronic version that they need, right? That's needed for this meeting. Then the next phase is for the document itself is the application is recognized as being received. And that happens at this meeting. And that's when the 65-day time limit starts. So it's kind of important that all those applications get into a meeting agenda, and that starts the clock ticking. And even if the application was received yesterday, it could still make this agenda and be received, but it does not necessarily mean that you have to start anything else. That is purely up to the discretion of the commission. And then the other thing I'll point out is that the only authority that can approve, deny, or reject, drive change in any of the documentation in the process is this commission, right? So if you want, I would be very blunt. If you want better quality in the drawings, the commission is going to have to drive that. Kevin can't drive it. Lisa can't drive it. The mayor can't drive it. This commission drives it. And that's per the regulations. That's the way the regulations are. But nobody else can even Ryan can't reject things. Ryan recommends. Ryan points out. Ryan suggests. But he doesn't accept or reject anything. And so it's very important that the commission is actually the authority on all of these things. So that's basically what I found here, right? So you have to, if you want change, then it's going to have to be driven from the commission. And the other thing about applications is that there's four distinct steps. They're not always some of them are they're not mandatory all the time, but one of them, again, receiving the application should be mandatory all the time. Then there's a presentation that's made by the applicant to this commission. And that's a distinct step, again, in the regulations, right? Something that would be done. And then there's a public hearing if required, not always required. Actually, the presentation doesn't necessarily have to be required either, right? It could be a simple enough application where it's administratively be figured out. You don't need to have the guy come in. It's perfectly clear what he's trying to do. I think the last one would have been a great example. If he was just splitting the property in two, not changing anything, everything's compliant, he wouldn't have to present that. That would have been a piece of cake, right? But there's other so the other one we're looking at, the 94, is not that straightforward. So that one does require conversation, right? So you have both of those situations. And then after the public hearing, then the final step is this commission makes a decision. And I think it's important for the commission to maybe remind, it was good for me as a new member to understand, you approve, you deny, you can deny with prejudice or without prejudice. And the other thing is the way I read the regulations is we could ask for an extension as well. We could drive that date change. If we can't, then what you would do is you deny without prejudice. And without prejudice means the whole thing starts again. They can resubmit, they can come back in again. But that's a way to manage these applications in this process. And I've looked at the other towns at their minutes, and it happens not all the time, but enough
so that when they got a particularly, you can tell if it's a particularly messy application, things aren't quite right, they'll deny it without prejudice. And so the guy can start all over again and then correct everything that's going on rather than go through revision after revision and handling a lot of paper back and forth. So, so in terms of document receipt and quality, I think it would be great to see those four steps for every application on the agenda, the way they're specified in the regulations, right? Because they are distinct steps. And if you bypass one, you can bypass it, whatever. That actually becomes something you can hand an applicant and say, this is what you're going to have to do. And Kevin is more than capable of being able to say, you're going to have to do all four of these things. Get ready. It's going to take you a minimum of two meetings, 65 days. Or he can say, this is a piece of cake. You'll get this done the next meeting. And that would give the applicant some idea of what they have, what's involved. A lot of times they know what's involved anyway, but anyway, they have a piece of paper. We can have a piece of paper as well that says, here's the timeline that we think it might happen. So this summarizes the findings that I discovered going through, looking through the process and how it works. And a couple of recommendations that we could keep as commissioners to know that we do have alternatives. If the drawings aren't right, we can send it back, right? We have the purview to do that. And that will, believe me, if you send a few back, then that will drive change to get them the way you want them to be. A lot of times people will do whatever they will do because they're allowed to do it, right? So, so that talks about document quality, a little bit about the timing. The next slide. The applications, they get looked at before they come to us. The documents get looked at before they come to us. They are not screened for any kind of quality level, and they can't be turned back if they do find something wrong. I'm certain that applicants are advised when something's wrong, but can't be turned back. The process has to be allowed to go forward. So again, all of that rests with the commission to enforce what the regulations are. And so, something that can be done, and it's done on a regular basis here, that supposing the drawings came in at the wrong scale, or the paper drawings were illegible, or whatever they happen to be, you can make that a requirement if you approve it with conditions, right? It says before you can go any further, you need to give us a set of drawings that's correct, at least two sets, maybe not 10, but at least two, because Kevin needs two. So those are things that you can do, again, to enforce the type of quality you want in drawings and other documents as well, right? To drive what you need. So I think one thing I want to leave you with is that the approval or denial authority, all right, has weight, right? And so that can be utilized to get what's required. So these slides just spoke to those specific two topics. I sent another packet. I was not intending to brief that tonight, primarily because it is not complete. It's probably not drawn out to the right levels in terms of process. Kevin's already told me that he sees some shortcomings in it, and I agree with him. I do as well. I hate to present things that I know have mistakes in them because it just becomes hard to, but I wanted to share that with the group because there are some things I found going through the whole process that I think need to be addressed. I'll give you a prelude.
Do you want to share any of it?
Well, so a couple of things. For one thing, I could not find any standards for digital data. Digital data is a requirement. It's not defined in the regulations, and there's no standards within any of our documentation that says this is what it should be. Nor does it say what is use is going to be. So I think that's something that you might want to consider. So in my previous life, I worked at Sikorsky. We handled supplier drawings. We had our own drawings. We had a lot of technical data, proprietary information, all kinds of stuff. So I had all this regulation kind of thing drilled into me. And I know governments don't issue NDAs, and they don't always recognize copyright or proprietary markings. But we did tell suppliers what we were going to do with it. So there might want to be some sort of statement along those lines with you know, especially since it is digital data now, right? And it can be sent everywhere. And we're putting on a public, and we're putting it in the public domain. So so that's one thing I think needs, you just need to write a standard for it. And then
anything that gets out of commission or without, you know, subject to regulation.
I get that. Yeah. I get that. I'm pointing out again. I have my experience with that is it's not a big deal until somebody makes it a big deal, and then now you got something you have to deal with. But if you have a policy for it, then at least you got something to hang your hat.
So during the COVID period, there was statutes in place that required application documentation to be posted on the city's website. That has been lifted. So there is no statutory requirement requiring submission of electronic documents. It is nice. It's certainly helpful for staff. It's certainly helpful for when Mark uploads things to the website. That all that information was required previously. A lot of towns still do it electronically. Some towns said, you know what, we're going back to the way it was. You can send them, like for example, I do a lot of work in Cheshire. They don't post anything on the town website. But we still provide them with electronic copies of all our plans and documentation. Just it's simpler often, but they don't post it on the website. They don't make it out for public consumption unless somebody specifically asks, gee, can I get a copy of that report or that those set of plans?
So that's intended use. And if you've said what your intended use is going to be with the documentation, then you're good. If you're a government agency, yeah. Right? This is a government agency. Rules are different for government agencies than they are for private companies. Right, U.S. government did things with our data that's why we were always careful what we gave them, right? Because they would do things with it, and we knew what they were going to do with it. So same thing here, right? Mm. And I'm not being critical. I'm making an observation, right? It is. I think electronic data is absolutely the way to go. If I was king for a day, you would never see another piece of paper again. That's good. And I know that's not won't be received well by everyone in the room, but I mean, I look at. A lot of these drawings nobody even looked at. We're asking for 10 copies. I think you can get away with four, right? I don't think you need 10 copies of drawings. I don't want the paper. As long as I'm here, you're wasting your time giving me the paper. So I think that's another suggestion to look at. The 7 steps need to be revised. You can't follow them. And I'm not saying that in derogatory. I think it's great that the steps exist, but they need to be updated. Inland wetlands, there's almost no inland wetlands applications in Derby. So I think that, so some of the things that, and there's almost no zoning board of appeals in Derby either. So those might ought to be placards that are separate from our process, right? Just take them out because they take up a lot of space.
Yeah. And, there's a zoning board.
No, I didn't say there wasn't one, but they hardly have any activity.
So,
I think you could put other things in the 7 steps that would help an applicant more, and maybe make those things a separate. Say, see this placard. It'd be a separate placard that Kevin would pull out. Says, you guys are doing it in a wetlands. You're going to do something special now, right? Because it really is special. They had 3, in the last 5 years.
It's been a little dry, right. Unintended, with wetland applications. There hasn't been a lot of proposals. There hasn't been a lot of need for submission of wetlands applications. A lot of the work you guys have seen lately, a lot of the applications you've seen have been in areas already developed or in properties that don't have any wetlands.
Right. I don't know what's going to happen with downtown. That might change, right, with downtown. If there's going to be development down there, I'm sure that something might, maybe not. But whatever, yeah. Bringing that up, there's likely to be a lot of activity here. Having those steps revised, I think, would be helpful, right? So those are some of the suggestions I think that we want to consider. And I'm sure there'll be others. I heard tonight. So the process does not seem to support revision. when changes occur. And that's not a criticism. That's an observation. Again, I worked for a company where we revised constantly. And we had this huge, massive organization that did nothing but handle revisions to aircraft modifications, right? It's a huge administrative task to keep it all straight. And so I'm not surprised to hear, you know, that Kevin didn't get to look at some of these things. He might not, right? The process doesn't indicate that you have to. There's nothing driving the applicant to go do that. But that might be something that says, this is your gateway into this commission, is through...
Well, once again, Kevin works one day a week, so it's, you know what I'm saying? So
what I'm saying is that what I heard tonight was how Kevin didn't see these things, and I get he only works one day a week. That's another thing. I didn't want to bring that up here.
I wasn't sure if you knew. So no, it's not like he's sitting at a desk until 5:30 or 5 or what have you.
I understand completely.
Yeah.
So it's likely that he wouldn't see things if... And again, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm making an observation. It says you have this conundrum now where you can't get the right people to look at these things either because they're not available or because the process doesn't say to do that. So there's two ways to handle this. If you change the process so that it has to do that, and then it gets assigned workloads, well, that's one way to justify more hours if you need it. You won't get the more hours unless you send the work his way.
Bill, a little bit of critique on your steps. I like them. But the first step is the most critical step. And what you have is the applicant gets an application. No. The applicant should be meeting with the zoning enforcement officer to discuss what exactly that they're trying to do in the city. And then the zoning enforcement officer will direct them to what application that they should be taking, what they should be applying for. Is it a site plan, special exception, permitted use, whatever it is? They need to know that before they submit any kind of...
And that gets back to my original comment, is that I'm given the process the way I observed it. And then I looked at the 7 steps to get an application. And the thing you said is not in the 7 steps.
Meeting with the zoning enforcement officer, it's in the zoning regulations.
But it's not in the 7 steps, okay, is what I'm saying. If I was given the 7 steps to follow, says this is how you get your application. It wasn't clear that you got to talk to the zoning enforcement officer. Say, I talked to a planning officer, right? Go to a planning office. There is no planning office.
No, we have a zoning enforcement
office. Well, even the sign outside Kevin's door doesn't say zoning office. And I'm not trying to be...
Okay, no.
I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm trying to say...
You're making...
I don't remember what it says, but it doesn't say planning, zoning. I kind of puzzled it out, right? And Mark was kind of pointing me over that way. So, okay, I got it.
Right.
Hold on one second, David. I think it's very... you're informing a lot of people that are on the board that don't go to City Hall, don't understand the process. And once again, too, there's a lot of things that were in here that are missing now. People have come and gone, like you said. I think it's all great, to be honest with you. And if we need to critique it and move things around or change the process or update it, especially with the electronic documentation, I think that the applicant deserves a process, deserves to know that, hey, this is going to be posted in the public, or what we will do with them or what we won't do with them at the time. I think there definitely needs to be, they need to be made aware of what it is. So I think it's all good information, to be honest with you.
So there's quite a few findings in the second document and recommendations. It is not finished. It doesn't have nearly enough input from all the other stakeholders. So it needs more work. I don't know how to proceed with that. Again, to me, it sounds like a subcommittee job. My wife's on the board of ed. So when they got something like this that comes up, they hand it to a subcommittee and it's 3 people go off and work it.
You're right.
And then they come back and report to the final board about what should change.
So what I was going to ask after you were done, and I believe that it's I'd like to ask for volunteers from the commission to form a subcommittee, you know, to gather the information and go off of what you said so far. But I believe that it's warranted for a subcommittee to gather the information between, you know, two or three of the commission members, gather everything, go through everything, and then come back to the commission and say, this is what we found, this is what we didn't find, and this is our recommendation. And then we could, hash it out and what the board decides to do from there. But I agree. I think it's definitely warranted for a subcommission or subcommittee to.
I think that's the best way to do it myself. You know? Right. And this way you could, they would be public meetings as well. Right. But, right. But with a smaller group, and you could break the thing into pieces, and then start making some progress on things. The other question I have is, so if we talk to council or if we talk to Ryan, does that invoke an expense that may not have been budgeted for?
I don't have the answer to that, Brian or Ryan.
Typically, yes. I mean, a lot of times when, I mean, this is not quite an adoption of zoning regulation, but it's an adoption of zoning related regulations related to your regulations, so that to the extent you seek professional guidance, I mean, I would expect there would probably be some cost. I don't think it'd be outrageous, but there's going to be some cost.
Wait, manage it just formulated,
Mr. Chairman.
Right. Okay.
Go ahead, Ray.
Just a suggestion, but I think Bill's doing a good job here. Why don't you appoint like a three-man subcommittee or?
Yeah, so what I was going to do was I was going to ask, for two other volunteers. I'm sure obviously Bill's put in a lot of legwork already. I'm sure that I don't want to speak for you, but I'm sure you would be on the subcommittee. So I was going to ask for two other volunteers that would want to, be on the subcommittee. We'll form it officially and kind of go from there.
Mr. Chairman, I would volunteer.
Okay, good, Dave.
You have me a nebulous voice coming out of a box.
Behind the curtain?
No,
what's it about?
Wait a minute.
Right?
My camera's there. You.
Okay, so we need one more. Bill, Dave. Albert?
So often these subcommittee meetings are held, typically an hour before a regular meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Or
pick another day, but they do need it. They could be virtual. They do need an agenda posted, Brian.
Yeah,
they need an agenda posted,
like a regular meeting,
and minutes taken.
Yeah. All right. So, Brian, we'll do it in a form of a motion to form a subcommittee.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, can I get a motion to form a subcommittee with Bill, Dave, and Albert? So is there anybody else that would like to be on the subcommittee before I say that? Okay, yeah, so those will be the three.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Raymond? Oh, second.
Second.
Danny? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, so that's good. Motion carries on subcommittee. All right, perfect. Does anybody else, Bill, do you have any other comments at the time to kind of finish up or
no,
good? Okay, good. All right, so we are on 11B. Brian handed us a packet.
Just a vape shop?
Vape shops, yep.
So I don't think I printed it out in part of it, but I emailed this out. Unfortunately, I didn't make it in the under the printer, but at the request of the commission last month, we did review, made a pretty cursory review of a handful of municipalities that either have regulations on the books regarding these vape shops or companies that are looking to enact regulations, generally making them more restrictive than general retail. So, for example, we found the city of Norwalk does have regulations governing vape shops with special permit requirements, standards for separation from vape shops to other vape shops, similar to how we have regulations governing alcohol sales, liquor stores. Stamford, similarly, special permit requirements and definitions regarding what is a smoke shop or vape shop. And again, similar to how you have regulations governing separation from liquor stores, separation distance from cannabis retailers, schools, et cetera. Some signage regulations governing them. Stratford, they're considering allowing vape shops only industrial districts. And Milford is considering a fairly comprehensive amendment to the regulations with definitions of tobacco shops, vape shops, and that the to be held under special permit criteria. So Milford, you know, I'll defer to Brian on some of these because his firm represents these communities as well as they're deliberating some of these modifications. Sorry, is this that? Yes.
Which email?
It's on the website. So there are communities that regulate these differently than other more traditional retailers. Obviously Derby does not. We don't have a special category for these. We don't have any governing regulations. They're just categorized as general retail, which is allowed in all the business zones, the CDD, MDD, and maybe in the industrial as well. But so if someone were to come in today to a shop in the Big Y Plaza and they wanted to convert a building from a restaurant to a vape shop, that would generally be handled administratively by Kevin. And unless there's some reason that they wouldn't get approved because of parking or some other factor, generally they would get administrative approval to open up. So there are communities that regulate them. Go ahead, Dave.
Let me ask, do we have a definition of a vape shop?
We do not.
So that's the first step, isn't it? To regulate. Well,
yes, it would have to be defined differently than a standard retail use.
Mm-hmm. David, if I may, at least in regards to the Milford and Westport zoning regulations that actually partners of mine assisted in drafting, they both are relatively simple regulations. They define, as you just mentioned, smoke shop, tobacco stores, vape shop, and then vaporizer, which are one of the products being sold. But effectively, after defining those uses, Milford's proposed regulation, although it has not passed yet, simply states that all smoke shops, tobacco stores, and vape shops, as defined in this article, are prohibited in all zoning districts of the city of Milford.
Okay.
So that's the approach that Milford and some other communities have taken. Westport, essentially, the Milford regulation is modeled on the Westport regulation. Westport goes a step further and in addressing other establishments that sell tobacco products. And in addition to the prohibition that I just read, yeah, if you're a establishment that doesn't meet the definition, that definition is basically 20% more of your area of the store, but you still sell tobacco products, you would be subject to a special permit. And that's how Westport is handling both a prohibition and then for other things like a convenience store, perhaps, if they're selling tobacco products, there's gas station, they'll be subject to a special permit application.
So Brian, and this leads me because I know Stamford has a 50% threshold for vaping tobacco products.
And the problem is, in all of these towns where you have a percentage of the product, it's an enforcement problem. How do you know when and how much of a vape product that somebody is selling there? Okay. And what happens is, if it's too difficult to enforce because of the definition, then it won't be enforced.
Well, that's definitely an issue. And certainly, I think with the lower threshold of what constitutes a vape shop or a smoke shop, I think it's pretty clear that some of those establishments, they might sell some, you know, have a cooler or something selling refreshments, but it's pretty clear, at least some of them, that they're vape and tobacco stores, and that's all they sell.
That's all they do. Right?
Usually it's in the name.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, your quick stop or gas station, you know, they might, you know, are they selling 20%, 30%, 10%? It's almost impossible to tell, but I think some establishments are certainly relatively easy to determine.
Some are. Some have some very unique, misleading names on their signage there.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be a problem, particularly in a city like Derby. That has limited resources.
My question really is, number one, who would be responsible for enforcing this regulation on amount of vapes? And then what action would they be able to take against the violators? Okay, this is, it's not as simple as, you know, cannabis or alcoholic beverages, because there's state licenses involved in those. In the case with vapes, this is, you know, it's not regulated by the state. It's kind of self-regulation. So that's my only question.
David, they have to be regulated. They no matter what they're selling as the product, there's nicotine, tobacco, so forth and so on. So it's got to be, they have to have
a license
from the state.
I believe they do. I'll verify that, but
I'm not sure.
Okay, Ryan will check that, but go ahead, Dave. I guess that's my assumption, so let me not assume on that, but I would think that any establishment that sells tobacco products has to have a license from the state.
My only concern is that the enforcement of it, I think, falls upon the municipality. And unless the municipality has the wherewithal and the means to enforce this, it's kind of like a paper tiger.
Well, that's certainly true, particularly as regards to the establishments that are here. But to the extent someone comes into the zoning office and says, I want to open up a tobacco shop or a vape shop, or maybe they use a different term, you can deny the application based upon the regulation. Now, that word may get out quickly and say, well, I'm just opening up a convenience store, and they end up selling those types of products. But it's really a policy decision whether to adopt it. And some communities have chosen to adopt and others have not. And then enforcement is obviously the next step.
To answer your question on that, according to vaperanger.com, this seems to be actually a pretty comprehensive article, despite the name of the website. If you're planning on opening your vape shop in the United States, the answer depends on where you are. 26 states require a specialized tobacco or vape license to sell vaping products. Connecticut is one of them.
Okay. I mean, also too, Dave, we have nothing in place right now. So that's why we kind of want to, I know our neighbors across the river, Ansonia has started to look at it as well. I don't know how far the process is. I believe they just started it, but I could be wrong. But also too, with nothing being said or having any type of regulation or really just starting it ourselves. But I just don't want to see delis or, you know, other places just happen to open up as vape shops and don't have to come to the board, don't have to come in and, you know, it's just swapped over from store to store.
So, Gino, it seems like our three options could be either allow vape shops without any restrictions, or allow vape shops with certain restrictions on quantity of the product that they're going to have and on distances, perhaps, from other uses. Or the third option is don't allow them at all.
Well, correct. I think maybe, you know, so we could gather some information. We don't want a ton of people coming to run and or swapping or doing what have you, renting spots and putting up a ton of vape shops. And before we get something, I think another option would be to put a moratorium on it until we get some regulations, you know, in place as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Raymond.
That's what I was going to suggest. I mean, it seems to be the consensus of most of the board anyway, or the commission, that we enact some type of laws or rules with this. So the definition should probably be first. But at the same time, I guess this question would be for Brian. How do we enact a moratorium like ASAP until we get this shelled out here and get a regulation and definitions in place?
Well, it is an option, and Ryan and I can coordinate some of the details of adopting.
Do we have to start a process like this evening, or?
Well, it's like adopting any. It's essentially adopting the regulation. It's
a temporary regulation. You have to have a public hearing. Mm-hmm. Okay, can we schedule that this evening for next month?
Well, no, I think you really ought to have the moratorium drafted and published before you have the public hearing. Okay. So it's not as simply as saying we're going to show up at a meeting and we're going to prohibit. You know,
yeah, because some of these places,
there's no definitions. I mean, it's going to take.
My opinion, but I know Ansonia is pretty far along there, Mr. Chairman. Anyhow, I think we should get the process going because these places are popping up all over the place. There's a few of them in Derby already, and they're kind of offensive with the lighting and things like that. I've heard some comments, and really, there's nothing stopping them now. It's a retail thing, just. And going open, you know.
Sonia said an issue, but there's some violence and stuff outside. So
I know Norwalk has had several problems with like camouflage products looking like candy to kids and kids going in and purchasing this stuff. I know there were a couple of problems that they've had that have been on the news recently.
Do we need a motion for you to start, or no? Can you and Brian get together, start the process, and then bring us back something for next month? We'll put it on the agenda.
Do we have any other questions to the commission? Any other questions on this?
Real David? Quick, the Danny? Statute or whatever, CGA. 21A-415 is the state statute regarding e-cigarettes as far as a license to sell them and all that. And they actually have a lot of great definitions in there if anybody wants to look at it in the meantime. Okay. As far as like what's
the... Say that again, Danny. What's the state statute for that?
21A-415. As far as like electronic cigarette liquid, electronic nicotine delivery system, vapor product, it's all listed out. Their definitions are in there as well as what's required. I think Ryan said he's going to send it out. But
I'll send it out there.
Right? Okay.
Dan, can I ask you a question? Does it have any requirement in that statute for local approval in order to get that license for tobacco or vapes? Because
there's a lot of words on here, Dave.
Okay. Because Ryan could look it up. Cannabis and alcohol, you have to have local approval.
Mr. Chairman, just one other thing. Not only vape shops, but in, you know, smoke shops, vape shops, there's a lot of other acronyms, names or whatever they use, like hookah lounges. And I think we got to encompass everything. even convenience stores, because those pop up everywhere. So let's, I think all of that should be by special permit, special exception, what have you. Like permitted in the zones that they're permitted in now is retail, but by special exception for those defined purposes or type of establishments.
Yeah, so convenience stores.
You want to? I would think
put a moratorium on convenience stores,
because even those are like popping up everywhere, you know.
So even in the,
on every corner.
So the Milford Planning and Zoning Board, under their definitions, they have it includes but not limited to e-cigarettes, vapes, vape pens, dab pens, tanks, mods, hookah pens. It goes through electronic nicotine delivery device. I mean, it goes pretty in depth. So they probably got most of that. I shouldn't say that, but once we look up the definitions from the state, I'm sure they go into depth. So I think it's good that Brian and Ryan start the process, let them bring back some definitions and some recommendations on where we go. But I think that's a good start, and maybe hopefully we could get on the agenda for next month.
Dave.
Yeah.
21A, 415A, subsection C, the second half of it, the department, this is for Connecticut issuing a certificate, the department may require that an applicant submit documents sufficient to establish that state and local building, fire, and zoning requirements will be met at the location of any sale.
Well, how on earth did that happen with the ones we have in Durham?
Say that one more time.
How on earth did that occur in Durham? But the ones that are opened up in Durham.
Well, David, I think they're probably just treating it that they're a retail establishment and they're opening in a commercial zone, and that
we don't have anything preventing it.
You don't have anything prohibiting it, exactly.
Specific. And change of use is governed under 195.30 and 195.132, memory serves. That the zoning enforcement officer allowed to businesses to swap from one permitted use to another doesn't require site plan approval, doesn't require.
I agree, Ryan, but that doesn't happen with liquor establishments or with cannabis establishments.
Well, no, because the regulations require otherwise.
What's that?
No, because the regulations require otherwise.
And that's the reason these vape shops are popping up all over the place.
Probably because they're profitable.
Well, that and because they're not classified like a cannabis or a liquor store. That's my point,
Mr. Chair. But also, too, I mean, to the what was discussed previous with respect to the following of the rules and processes, there was a process in place that if there was something in the CDD, it was not supposed to be go in. If there was a change of use, it was not supposed to come before this board, but there really, well, the reality is
it's changed. The regulation changed.
No, I understand it, but it was changed. But that was just so that it could be like a free pass for whoever wants, you know, whoever's in charge of not following any rules. And that's what happened right on Elizabeth Street
It was changed prior to that.
No, I understand
that. I asked that
question. No, I understand.
So that's why I'm bringing this up now, is because, like I said previously, I don't think it's right that a deli goes into a smoke shop, period.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's right that it didn't come to the board. So that's why I had asked those questions and found out that it was changed previously. So that's why we're trying to follow the rules. Right now, the rules were followed because it was changed prior to that.
Well, so, but it could have been
dealt with, but it's so staff-wise, it went through because nobody was
trying. So, Mr. Chairman, to sum up, let's just let Ryan and Brian show, let them work on it. And let's move on next month and as quickly as we can to enact the moratorium, so no more of this happens. And in the meantime, we'll work out a comprehensive regulation.
And I agree. And that's why we're here discussing that. So if nobody has any other questions for, on 11B, we'll go to 12. Can I get a motion to pay bills as deemed correct?
Excuse me, we didn't need a motion for the Ryan. And...
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right.
So we'll be paid bills correct.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Second. Second. Row.
Second.
Go ahead, Bill. Sure.
Request about the payment of bills.
Yep.
I would appreciate the what the budget status is. It seems like the funding to this comes out of the city engineer's budget. There's a line item for $10,000 in there that I think that didn't associated with. And so since we're being asked to approve an expense, I think we should get an idea back on how much of the budget's been consumed, how much does this consume of the remaining budget, and then what's left to go kind of thing. So we have some idea of where we stand.
Okay, I could.
It's possible to get, right?
Yeah, I could get in touch with the finance director and get and get what the balance is left on this line item and where we are to date.
What I would be afraid of, right, is so the fiscal year runs June, July.
Correct.
We're, what, 4 months in?
Well, it starts July 1st.
July 1st. Yep. All right, so 2 months in.
Yep.
And so you get 8 months in, and I've had this happen to me in work. You know, you got 12 grand worth of work, and you spent 15. So then you start having to have a problem there. That's the only reason for bringing it up, so that we know we're not going to approve something that might not be budgeted. That's the reason for asking.
Oh, that's good. So we know exactly where we're at. We know we've had problems there.
Position, you got to go ask for more too, right? That might be the other situation you run into. Since you run out of money, you got to ask for more. It's better to know right up.
All in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right. Can I get a motion for adjournment? If nobody has any other questions.
Second.
Motion adjourned.
8:28. Romans 8:28.